Anyway, did you watch the race?
Yes.
I half watched the race.
Were you driving again?
Sorry, I've listened to many races while driving. I definitely don't watch them. No, I'm not that bad. No, this was, I was at work. You know, I got a call on Thursday. Hey, Scott, would you be free to do a gig on Saturday from 6 until 8? Yeah, sure, I'm not doing it. I'll do that. I looked at my racing lineup. Jeddah Grand Prix, Saudi Arabia Grand Prix 2025. 6 p.m.
Yep.
Rookie error. It's fine. I've done it before. There will be gigs. There will be races to watch. So anyway, it's fine. I thought, you know, I kind of, my job involves playing the piano. So I was in a fairly busy-ish restaurant and they kind of angled the piano in a way that nobody could really see what was on my iPad screen. You know, some people might be able to, but I turned the brightness down. Anyway, I thought, do you know what? What I'm going to do is on the music stand, I'm going to put my phone with F1 TV on. As a legitimate paying member and paying subscriber of F1 TV, I will watch the race on F1 TV. Tried to find a working stream. There's three, and I tried to find a working one, and then it didn't work, and then I had to turn off the ad blocker and then turn on the ad blocker. You know the story. We're trying to find streams for this kind of stuff. Anyway, all the time I'm trying to play background jazz for people trying to eat their dinner. And it wasn't going very well. I was, at best, noodling aimlessly while trying to get the stream to work. Anyway, finally got the stream to work picture in picture. And I'm thinking, great, this is all good. At which point the manager likes to come over quite regularly, sort of hover around near the piano. You know, he's a good manager. He likes to be seen to be doing things. Doesn't mean he is doing things. He just likes to be seen to be doing things. So if he is listening, you were doing a brilliant job. I thought it was very good and very managerial. But he kept coming around and I kept having to swipe away as soon as I saw he was coming near the piano. And then swipe back, you know, to bring up the picture. And then, what did I miss? Oh, I missed the start, you know, and all of this kind of stuff. So most of my race was spent either watching a tiny, tiny picture-in-picture version of the race or watching for a manager coming over to make sure that I wasn't watching a Formula One race picture-in-picture. So I missed the start. Did anything happen?
No.
No, not really.
Great, moving on then.
I mean, that should be the response because it seems to have been quite a controversial turn one, and I don't understand why, if I'm honest, because it came down to they went in side by side, Max jumped off the track, gained an advantage, didn't give it back, got a 5-second penalty. It didn't follow the rules, got penalised by stewards. I don't really see where the controversy around it was, to be honest with you. People just making the most of it because it's Max, I guess.
The controversy is Max got maxed.
Yeah.
And he didn't like it.
Yeah, and it's just Red Bull, you know, Christian Horner showed up to the press conference after the race with printouts of where Max was on track versus Oscar at various stages of the corner to try and prove he was ahead. But anybody who's watched Max race since 2021 at least knows that he does that because he just rolls off the brakes to make sure he's ahead at the apex, knowing full well that he's not going to make the corner. And they've got wise to that and they've started penalising. So it's time he learned and adjusted his driving to take that into account.
Yeah, I think the penalty was totally fair. Some people were calling for it to be 10 seconds. I don't think it should be 10 seconds. I think 5 seconds is a fair penalty because 5 seconds is the equivalent of give the place back.
I don't like it. I think it should be give the place back.
I agree.
It's the first race this year where it hasn't been won from pole. It just shows how important track position is. And yeah, all Max had to do in theory was gain 5 seconds, which can be done. And I dare say he probably got second place in that race because he was leading through the first stint. I think if he was behind Oscar, he may have fell into the clutches of potentially George and Charles a bit more. So he took track position I don't see why stewards can't just say the penalty is you give the place back.
Yeah, did they agree that this isn't a thing anymore to say give the position back?
Yeah, so the way it used to be was they used to say to, you know, Charlie Whiting, you know, what do you think? Do you think we need to give the place back? And then he would advise whether he thought they should give the place back or not. Since his sad passing and the conga line of people who have tried to do his job since then, they've decided they wanted it a bit more formal. So they basically said, no, we're not going to advise you. We're going to leave it up to you. If you think you need to give the place back, you give the place back. If you don't think you need to give the place back, then don't. But the stewards might penalise you. But I think the stewards should have added to their arsenal the option of telling them to give the place back. So you get your 5-second penalty, your 10-second penalty, or give the place back. And if, you know, another two people have got past that guy since between, you know, the incident taking place and the stewards telling you, tough. You've got to go back behind all three of them then. That's the risk you're willing to take.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And, you know, you could probably tighten it up and say, you have to give the place back and remain behind for two corners, you know.
Which I believe is the rule since Spa 2007. Eight, whenever Lewis did that, wasn't it, to Kimi Raikkonen?
Yeah.
Overtook him off track. Yeah, gave him back out the last corner and then immediately took him into the next corner. And they came back and said, no, if you give it back, it has to be a lasting advantage to give it back of at least, I think it's two corners they agreed on from that stage.
Yeah, I think give the place back is an entirely justified and entirely sensible action that stewards can take if they feel that somebody has gained an advantage, rather than it being an out-and-out penalty, you know, add 5 seconds or a stop-go or something like that. There's something that's very simple about give the place back that I think works. And maybe the fact that it's so simple, is this the reason Formula One are afraid of it? Are they afraid that the race director, is the race director too afraid to make this decision now, or why have they decided to get rid of it?
Well, I will say there was an incident a few years ago in the WEC, last race of the season, where I think it was a Ferrari overtook a Porsche by basically punting them off the track, getting ahead of them, and then the Porsche was then behind the Ferrari. And the race director, Eduardo Freitas, basically said, your punishment is you've got to give the place back. The problem was, as soon as he said that, the Porsche decided to pit. Mm-hmm. So now the Ferrari's got to give the place back to a car that's a minute and 40 seconds behind it. So then it got into a bit of a messy situation of, well, we can't give that place back. They've chosen to pit and all that sort of stuff. And I think in the end it got converted into a time penalty. But yeah, I guess that was just, it did look very messy and very, very silly. And that might just be something F1 want to avoid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's a good way to do it. Give the place back or give the place back within three laps, or it's a 5-second penalty.
Personally, I'd just say I don't care that they've pitted, then you still need to give the place back. You took the risk of not giving it back immediately, so there's the major punishment.
Yeah, I mean, in this instance, you can see why they did it, because they thought that they would be able to take this 5 seconds, I guess almost as a tactical foul.
Yeah,
and accept a 5-second penalty and be able to swallow a penalty and maintain track position. But, you know, even with the cooler temperatures, you're not going to keep Oscar Piastri behind. He was quick. I would almost go as far as saying that was... sorry, Simon, what you seem to have just face-palmed there. Could you let me know why you face-palmed there?
So I know what's coming next.
Yes, to those of you who did listen to last week's episode, which was titled after this incredible line, this was in fact an Oscar winning performance. Matthew, do you agree?
Can't agree with that, Scott, bloody hell. I think F1 were very lucky that Oscar had such a good race. He held that gap to Max, knowing full well that he was going to get, never mind an undercut, but obviously Max's penalty was going to put him in the lead. And everyone were lucky that it worked out well, that, because if Max had pulled more than 5 seconds, then it would have been a serious issue. But the issue with Max was, wasn't it? It wasn't just the way he went off track, but the fact when he was off track, he planted it and kind of didn't even try and not get an advantage. He just went for it, like as if it was his racing line. And I think that kind of irritated the stewards as well.
Yeah, I mean, at worst, they went into the corner side by side, and then by the time they come out of it, Max was, what, 1 second ahead? So <Yeah. laughs> it's not... Yeah, you're right there. That was another factor to it.
This race kind of personified everything that we've discussed about Piastri, of, hey, A, he's kind of rising talent. You know, he's at the peak of so far of what his skill is, and he's just doing it so well, and so unflustered, so cool, so collected, and almost, yeah... almost unentertaining. I mean, he did give it a big woo when he crossed the line, but I quite admire it, to be honest. I think given recent years of Max, especially, and the Lewis drama, I think just having a nice quiet Oscar just winning races is actually quite a bit of a relief in a way. But yeah, it was a nice, well, it was a good drive to, like I say, he managed the gaps that he needed, and then he just kept it. He kept Max at bay, kind of. He had it, I think he had it in hand, really. If Max had started pushing a bit further, he had it in hand to kind of stretch his legs as well.
He was also not afraid to get the elbows out and overtake. Was it Lewis? He overtook around the outside on the very, very dusty track.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a move.
Brilliant move.
It did have me thinking, like, it's slow burning. I think we're going to have a big discussion one day about, is Lewis washed? And is it like a factor that Oscar's performed two amazing overtakes on Lewis in places he shouldn't do? And we kind of think it's a credit because you can do that on Lewis because Lewis has got the racing ability. But is it the way around? Is it Lewis is not that good and Oscar's just picking past him?
But I mean, compare and contrast Oscar's overtake on Lewis to Lando's attempted overtake on Lewis.
Oh, God, that was pathetic.
Earlier in the race, where Lewis just baited him not once but twice into overtaking him just before the DRS activation line or DRS detection line, I should say. It's like the first time that happens, okay, yeah, I can see what's going on. But Lando, you shouldn't be letting that happen to you twice. Come on. And then your engineer having to tell you to play it smart. Yeah.
The second time was a bit iffy from Lewis, though, like in defense of Lando. Like that was a pretty sudden break from Lewis.
I don't think it was a sudden break. He was all the way to the right-hand side of the track. And I don't think he braked. I think he lifted off, which admittedly in an F1 car, you know, that is generating 1G of deceleration. So it did look a bit suspect, especially from the onboard. But when you saw it from, you know, the outside camera, it didn't look anywhere near as bad. It didn't have that brake test feel to me. Not like when Max did it to Lewis in the same place where he was in the middle of the track and a good couple of hundred meters before the corner. Like I say, Lewis was all the way to the right-hand side of the track. And if you'd have learned that he was being told to fuel save or manage his brakes or manage his tyres, you probably wouldn't have even thought anything about where he'd made the decision to start slowing down.
It was the DRS detection point being after the corner. Is that a new thing? Because I don't think I've spotted that before, but I quite liked it.
Yes, they moved it in 23, I believe it was, to try and stop these games that were being played. Because I think the next year as well, even in 22, we had this, was it Charles and Max playing silly buggers into that final corner, trying to not get DRS until after it.
But I had the impression that Lewis was playing with Lando. I think Lewis kind of never really thought that he was racing Lando. But it kind of, you know, if you can have this game of DRS fun, then at least he had a couple of laps of fun out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, not a great weekend for Lando. I mean, on paper, he finished P4 after qualifying P10. But again, it's like you said last week, Sim, he qualified out of position and finished just below position, which makes it look better than it is. But actually, it wasn't a great weekend.
I think saying he qualified 10th is a bit generous.
yeah
that was not great. Why do you think that, of all the drivers, why do you think Lando put it in the wall?
He was unlucky because I don't think he was the only driver to make that exact mistake this weekend at that corner. It just seemed to me that he was the only one who ended up in the wall. I think in the same session, Max had completely whacked the front of that curb, hadn't he? And got a bit of air.
He had full air,
Yeah, concerned about his concerned about the damage to the underfloor. But yeah, he seemed to land straight and carry on, whereas Lando just seemed to wobble and pitch him into the wall. I think he himself said afterwards that he was trying too much to get that perfect lap, rather than just trying to qualify on pole. He's trying to go out there and qualify on pole by a tenth or two tenths. But maybe he just needs to rein it in a little bit. He's clearly got the fastest car on the grid. I do think he's a faster driver than Oscar at the minute. So yeah, he doesn't need to try as much. Maybe he just needs to relax. A Damon Hill 95 situation.
Yes, very, very much that. I hadn't actually put those two together, but now you mention it, yeah, I can definitely see that. I did read a thing that said, and again, this could be, you know, completely fictional, but as McLaren have developed this car, they have made it slightly harder to drive. And Oscar can deal with this better than Lando, which is why it ended up in the wall. It's just, it's not quite as compliant a car, but it's a faster car. Again, sort of a very miniature example of what Red Bull are facing, in that it's awkward but fast when it needs to be. So I don't know whether there's any truth in that. I don't know whether it's completely made up, but it definitely seems that Oscar can manage that car a bit quicker, especially in race pace.
I don't know if you've seen the post-race interview with Lando, but he got very tetchy when they spoke about the car. And I don't know if Zach and Andrea Stella said it as well, really, but Lando was very much to the point of, people keep saying we've got the fastest car, but we haven't. We've seen today that we haven't. And yeah, I don't know if he's lost confidence in the car or any kind of side of that, but yeah, he got very short in the interview when pushed on it.
Well, I mean, statistically, somebody has the fastest car. That's the way that Formula One works, and it's definitely not Ferrari.
Yeah, Oscar was asked about that exact comment as well afterwards, when it was put to him that Lando says, you don't have the fastest car, and Oscar says, oh, I think we clearly do, basically.
Yeah, he's not wrong. He's not wrong. And once we get into, you know, a run of European racetracks, which are going to be in, you know, in fairly hot temperatures as well, that seems to be where the McLaren really shines, is hot temperatures. As soon as it starts to get cool, I think that's when, not when Red Bull can catch up, but that's when Max can catch up, which is why Q3, what was it, after the first run, Max was 1,000th ahead. Yeah. Which was, you know, just brilliant, and it was a, you know, it was a very, very good qualifying session, and it was a brilliant lap by Max to take pole. But fundamentally,
did you notice he had help from Yuki on that lap?
Yeah,
yes, and in fact, I don't know whether you saw on the F1 YouTube channel the ghost car video. Did you see that?
No,
they did. That they did a ghost car version of the Max lap and the Oscar lap from Oscar's car. So they did it from an in-car view, and they did it from an out-of-car view. And Max was ahead for quite a lot of the lap. So, at one point he was well over a car's width ahead of Oscar, which was seriously impressive. But there was a couple of times Oscar clawed back. But yes, you can definitely see heading into turn one, Max is way ahead. Well, not way ahead, but ahead enough. And that's thanks to Yuki.
I think on the sectors in qualifying, like, his first sector was purple, and then the second two sectors were actually yellow. They weren't even like PBs.
Yeah.
In the second and third sector. But like I said, I think that help from Yuki in the first sector gave him that much of a boost. They carried it round.
Well, it worked. Yuki at least did something useful this weekend. It got Max in full position.
Proper second driver.
Yeah, shame it didn't really come to much in the race, but that's for another day.
I was disappointed to see Yuki crash out, to be honest, because I think he'd shown signs through qualifying, especially that he's getting to grips, and it would have been interesting to see through that race kind of where he'd have been.
I think Yuki is the best second driver Red Bull have had since Sergio Perez. And whether he's better or not than Perez, I don't know. I don't think he is, but yeah, he did a decent job in qualifying. Where did he qualify? Was it ninth? If it was.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, if this had been Sergio last year crashing out on the first lap, you'd have gone, oh, God, Sergio again. But that's because Sergio was usually down in like 16th or 17th. I think crashing out with fighting with Gasly over P7 on the first lap is slightly different. So, yeah, at least he, like I say, at least he was up there. He was in Q3, which helps Max get pole. Max wouldn't have got pole without that. I think he was just very unlucky, that corner, the way the collision happened. I do think Yuki was to blame, but it was also one of those where it was a racing incident, I think. I don't think there's even much either of them could have done other than just not racing. So
totally agree. Two racing cars that happened to be a bit too close for comfort, and then none of them were in the race.
Yeah.
Nobody was to blame. Nobody was not to blame. I just pulled up the qualifying results here. Yuki qualified 0.03 behind Lewis.
Yeah.
Now, is that good for Yuki, bad for Lewis, or both?
Bad for Lewis. Second off Max.
Yeah, I think that was a bad session from Lewis.
Yeah. He had a bad weekend.
He did. He really did. He's never got on well at Saudi Arabia. I don't think it's ever been a track that suits his style, but he seems to be a little bit lost at the moment. He's what, 0.4 off Charles, was he, in qualifying?
He was...
Six tenths
off, which is, that's probably a couple of tenths further away than he's usually been. And then in the race, he was that seventh car out of the top four teams, just going round 30 seconds behind Charles at the end. Not a good weekend at all. He's clearly struggling with the car. He doesn't like the ground effect cars. I think that's become clear. I don't think he's... He was talking in the week about how he has to use engine braking in the Ferrari, which is something he'd never had to do with the Mercedes. Lewis is very strong on the brakes and uses his braking and weight transfer to rotate the car into a corner. And he's saying that that's not how the Ferrari likes to be driven. You use the engine braking as much as the brakes to slow the car down effectively. So he's trying to learn that. He's definitely lost something. I don't think he's lost everything. I think he's still competitive, as we saw in the China sprint race. I just don't think this season's going to be as good as everybody was sort of hoping, because I don't think the Ferrari car is as good as it. I don't think it's a championship contender like it was last season.
No, definitely not. I mean, I think that what we saw last year, I think I remember mentioning this on the Vocast last year, in that, and I think I said that in 2025, what we can expect is some tracks will be McLaren tracks and some tracks will be Mercedes tracks and some tracks will be Ferrari tracks. And, you know, if you think back to when the Ferrari was quickest last year, the Ferrari was quick on outlier tracks like Monaco and like Monza. And it was fairly average on quite a lot of the other ones. I think that's definitely playing out where, you know, this... Well, it's hard to say whether this was a Mercedes track or a Ferrari track, given that George qualified ahead of Charles, but they swapped position, or that Charles finished ahead in the race. It's really hard to say whether, you know, where that car is, where that Ferrari is, because Charles said that, you know, am I right in remembering that he said that this was like the best balanced car he had driven in quite some time? I think I remember reading that somewhere. I heard it in an interview. He seems to have got totally dialed in with that car, and Lewis is just not. And I know that Lewis is hanging on for 2026, and you can be sure that he can't wait for this year and this era of car to be over.
I think that's exactly it, to be honest with you. He just needs to stick it out. Charles has had the benefit of that car's been developed with his input for the last 6 years now. He's been at Ferrari, is it? It's been that long. Jesus Christ.
imagine putting up with the words of wisdom for that long.
Yeah. So I think Lewis just needs to stick it out. The problem with Lewis is that I think he can be a very emotional driver, and he does risk getting himself into a bit of a downward spiral with that car. I'm sure when we get to some of his old favourite tracks, his Canadas, his Silverstones, his Hungaroring, he might see the flashes of the old Lewis in there. He's definitely fallen off his game, but he's 40 years old. He was never going to be able to be, you know, that good for that long.
Let me throw a completely wild scenario. Do you think this would ever happen where there is an Antonelli and Lewis swap? you know, young Italian driver driving a Ferrari, looks really promising. Oh yeah, that sounds good. Lewis Hamilton gets back into, you know, back into the old shoes at Mercedes. You know, they've got 2026 sorted. No.
No, not even close.
Oh. Hey, Sim, would you put a bet on that Lewis doesn't win Silverstone?
That's a tough one.
I don't think I would, to be honest with you.
You can't bet against it, can you?
No, I mean, the fact he won last year, that was impressive. But the fact, I think, was he second the year before? And that Mercedes was an utter crap box. And he still dragged it into second place there. He won a race there in 2020 on three wheels as well. Let's not forget.
Yeah, that was great.
Which might be apt for Ferrari. No, you got to think that if he's going to win a race this year, then that's got to be a prime contender for him, because he does seem to find that those extra couple attempts at that track.
Yeah,
I do think that if you're Lewis, you would look at this year and you would say, there's two races I would really love to win. One of them is Silverstone. What's the other one?
Monza.
It's got to be Monza. You can be sure that he would absolutely love that. And you know, the Ferrari does go quite well there, but it remains to be seen. Like you said, Sim, Lewis is a very emotional driver, and he might just check out for the rest of this year and just, you know, be monosyllabic Lewis with two-word answers, kind of the way that Max is with most media interviews now, especially the FIA-sanctioned ones. Right, who to talk about next?
Can we talk about the actual controversial penalty from this race?
Lawson.
Right, hang on. Okay. At this point, I don't know what happened. This was probably a bit when there was a manager walking over and I was trying to play something in G major and make it look like, no, I've been playing this tune all along. So can somebody please describe to me in total non-judgmental terms what happened?
So Lawson's coming down the front straight, overtaking Doohan, I believe it was. Doohan moves to the inside of the track and Lawson stays on the outside. He's passed before the breaking point.
Who's
for
passed?
Turn one. Lawson's passed Doohan before the breaking point for turn one.
On the outside?
He completely cocks up his braking, runs slightly wide, runs over the curb, comes back onto the track and drives off. He then gets a 10-second penalty for leaving the track and gaining an advantage.
Did he pass?
He was completely passed before the braking point.
Oh, he just gave the position back.
Why does he even need to give the position back?
Well,
so he was pulled back in behind him.
If there was a wall there, he would have been out of the race, right?
Yeah, that's a braking error. He's not done that to take the position. He's done the position and then made an error.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay. I should probably watch this, shouldn't I?
You should have a look at it, because I can't see how. I don't like Lawson. I think he's a bit of a knob. He's completely arrogant. I just don't like him, but he did not deserve a 10-second penalty for that. Ultimately, I think he finished 12th anyway and only dropped down to 13th. But still, it's just a lack of consistency from the FIA stewards as usual.
I've just watched the Lawson doing thing. Well, that's just daft. Why did he get a penalty? I cannot understand any instance in which that is deemed worthy of a penalty.
But also 5 seconds more than Max. So yeah, it's a worse penalty than Max got.
Yeah. Max literally just booted it over the runoff and went, I'll have that. Thanks very much. So did he get 10-second penalty?
He got 10-second penalty for that.
Oof. I mean, does somebody not like him?
Most people don't like him, but I still don't think he deserved it. Was it Brazil last year when Behrmann hit someone and spun and then they gave him a penalty for it as well?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, how to kick a man when he's down. Okay, that was not great. That was some pretty poor stewarding. Have you seen the FIA document about it? I'm asking because I haven't. But okay, hang on. Okay, so here is what the FIA said. determined that car 30, Lawson, attempted to overtake car 7, Doohan, and in doing so, left the track. While he completed the overtake before turn 1, the speed that he carried into the turn meant that he could not navigate turn 1 without leaving the track. He therefore could not successfully overtake car 7 without leaving the track and thereby gained a lasting advantage, which he did not give back. The standard penalty of 10 seconds was therefore applied. Disagree. They say that he couldn't overtake car 7 without leaving the track.
But they also did say he'd passed him.
Yeah. It says, while he completed the overtake before turn 1, he didn't complete the overtake before turn 1. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the FIA. Are you in any way surprised by this?
No.
I do believe at the bottom it says Mr. Enrique Benoldi.
It does as well. Yeah.
Does it? Okay. Yes, it does. And some other people that I don't know. That's just stupid. I think this is one instance where we're actually all in agreed that the penalty dished out was not appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Bizarre. All right, moving on.
Sim, I think you posted it, that during the race for Max's radio, they beeped out as if he'd sworn.
Yeah.
But then in the actual transcript, he hadn't sworn.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, so when they told him that he had the 5-second penalty for leaving the track, gaining advantage and all that. So Max's catchphrase, which he's trademarked, is simply lovely. And he responded with that, and then it was bleeping lovely. So obviously everybody takes that to mean fucking. The transcript after the race that people have said that what he actually said was really. And so they bleeped out the word really to make it look like he was saying something worse than he was.
Aww.
Which is just, yeah.
That's not now, really on.
It's just crap.
Yeah. There are some people who said he actually said bloody lovely, but either way, yeah, I mean, editorial decisions with the bleeping.
If you really want, I can put an official pause in the vocast and I can open up F1 TV, but I think I've had enough official pauses in today's vocast. This vocast needs no more safety cars and it needs to be green flag running all the way to the end without me interrupting for bizarre purposes. Anyway, it's probably on Reddit. I may, if I remember, actually open up the F1 TV replay, because that's completely unedited driver to car radio.
Yeah.
Which is quite, or driver to pit radio, which is quite good.
I want to give credit to Charles Leclerc.
Go on then.
So what was it? It was more than 30 laps, wasn't it, on the mediums he did?
Yes, I think it was.
Which I thought was unreal. The fact that he didn't just do it, but he kept the pace up as well. And then the pace, I think he did kind of burn it a bit at the end, run out of pace a little bit, but is it Russ? It was Russell and Lando, wasn't it? He overtook to get to third.
Yeah.
So he actually kind of did earn that third place as well. He kind of drove to it, which, as we've discussed with Lewis and the Ferrari issues, Leclerc was 31 seconds up the road. And I think, yeah, I'm not quite sure where it's come from.
Yeah, I mean, it's Ferrari's first podium of the year outside the sprint race, which is utterly bizarre statistic, really.
Well, he was in clean air for quite a lot of it, and it allowed him to run 9 laps extra. So good tire management and clean air did, that really, really worked wonders for him.
Ferrari and strategy win for a change.
Twice a season.
Surely not. Yeah, I mean, again, we should probably do a Lewis episode. I don't think we can really talk about Charles without talking about Lewis as well, given that the gap was so huge. But, you know, that car is capable of a good result. Only one of those drivers has a win so far, and it's Lewis. But only one of those drivers has a podium in the Grand Prix, and it's Charles. So it does seem to be possibly quite a peaky car, but they all are. So too bad. Let's do a Lewis episode at some point as well.
I think the Mercedes isn't what you'd call a peaky car.
Is it just not that bad, not that good?
Yeah.
It's just fine.
George is going to finish every race this season between third and fifth.
He's finished every competitive session in the top five.
Yeah.
Which is really impressive. But none of those have been in first place, and none of those look likely to be in first place either.
No, no. But he also doesn't like it's going to be below fifth.
Yeah, I mean, that Mercedes is pretty quick. It seems to be reasonably balanced. It might sneak a race win this year. It might not.
I think I get the feeling that whatever that car's capable of on any given weekend, George is going to deliver it. So if it's got the same traits as Mercedes had last season where the cooler temperatures help it out, then yeah, I think you'll see him win a race somewhere like Las Vegas again in the middle of the desert at night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of got... George has gone up in my estimation already this year. Like I say, I think he's delivering everything that car's got. I don't think he's leaving anything on the table. He's really stepped into that team leader role at Mercedes, and he's running with it, and he's making it his own. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about what Max is going to be doing next season. One of the rumours is, you know, Mercedes still interested in him. George is making a pretty good case for himself as to why he shouldn't be dropped for Max, I think.
I think if you're Toto Wolff, the last person you need in that team is Max Verstappen. And I think that the first person you need is George Russell. I mean, I think George is very much a long-term Mercedes driver. He's such a good fit for that team and for that car. You know, I don't think he's not a Lewis Hamilton. He may sneak a championship at some point, but he's really good. He's fast. He does everything that they need him to. You know, and he's doing well. I guess if the car was outstanding, you know, if Mercedes develop a car that's sort of, you know, 2016, 17, 18, 19, blah, 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 I could see George winning a championship.
Oh, yeah.
He's not going to drag a less competitive car to a championship win. But if the car has got such a good advantage, yeah, he'll win a championship. I think he's great. I think he's doing an absolutely super job. Kimi Antonelli is doing a better job than I expected. In the second car, I think he's doing really good. He finished sixth after qualifying fifth. I mean, that's good. This is a fairly terrifying racetrack. You know, Formula One rookie, the guy who binned it in Parabolic at Monza on his FP1 outing last year. You know, he's doing good. Mercedes are, I guess, you know, they're clearly McLaren have overtaken them. Max has overtaken them, but they're just kind of there, aren't they? And they'll continue to be just there.
The thing to consider with the Max rumours as well is that you have got Kimi Antonelli there, really promising. I think he did hit the wall, didn't he, in the race and got away with it.
Yep.
That's what I'm loving about Kimi, to be honest, is he's rapid, but he's also like happy to throw it at a wall to be rapid. Like kind of, he probably will be kind of smoothened off as he develops. But yeah, that kind of raw, fearless pace is kind of fun. But would you want to have him as a second driver to Max, trying to develop in a Max-led team, or definitely have him not in that second driver role behind George? And I think he's doing a lot of work with Valtteri Bottas, isn't he?
Yes.
I think there's a lot of support going on there. I'm not quite sure kind of what hand George has in developing Kimi, but you can guarantee the environment that kind of George fosters supports that, even kind of passively, if not actively.
Well, Bottas is probably the absolute best person to be working with. You know, for a start, he's finished. He doesn't get bothered. He doesn't get stressed. He doesn't get flapped. He knows how to... This is going to sound harsh. He knows how to finish P2. But you know what I mean? Like, he knows how to just cruise around, drive the car to like 95% of its capabilities, maybe get the odd pole position, maybe sneak the odd win, but just bring that car home. And I think if you're a Mercedes, you probably just want that right now.
Yeah. But yeah, as Sim said about George going up in estimations, because he really floundered at first alongside Lewis, I think he was almost disappointing and almost concerning. I think last year he kind of stepped it up. I think especially when everybody knew that Lewis was going, I think that probably helped him in a way. And he definitely saw some improvement there. But this year, like you say, he's just had everything out of the car all the time. He's not left anything on the table. That car has achieved everything it can do in his hands. And yes, it's not race winning. It's not consistent podiums or, like I say, second places, but it's the best it can do in his hands. So, yeah, I think he's just doing everything he can do and everything he needs to do right now as the number one driver.
Yeah, I think he's doing great. You touched very briefly on the Max rumors, and I think that we should do a very quick dive into them. Right now, it seems that Max has a couple of different options. Option one, stay at Red Bull. Option two, take a sabbatical and see where you want to go for 2027. Option three, go to Aston Martin for $300 million. option four, just retire and just be a sim racer. Simon, if you were Max Verstappen, what would you do?
His contract runs until the end of 27 with Red Bull, I believe. And the rumour is that he's got a get-out clause if he's not got a race-winning car. Now, he's won a race in that car, but I don't think you would argue it is a race-winning car.
Well, that's certainly something for lawyers to argue about, isn't
exactly.
it? When is a race-winning car not a race-winning car?
Exactly. So I don't see him taking a sabbatical. I think Max likes racing too much to take a sabbatical. I think the smart move is to stay with Red Bull for 26 and see what the field looks like during 26 before committing anywhere for 27. I think it'd be, if he took a sabbatical in 26, the first year of the new rules cycle, he might be behind the curve a little bit when it comes to some of the Norris's, Piastri's, Leclerc's on how to drive them.
Matt, what would you do?
I'd say stay with Red Bull. The Aston option's interesting because, like I say, a ridiculous amount of money that shouldn't even be offered to anybody, anywhere, ever. But there's still no signs of progress at Aston Martin at all. Like, and yes, it's new Ian, it's wonderful touch and everything like that, but everything about Aston Martin looks crap. Like, there's no shining light at all apart from, oh, Adrian Newey's in the background. I'd love to see Max fighting for 10th place with Lance Stroll as a teammate. I mean, that'd be hilarious, but like, kind of.
Yeah.
But, I mean, surely.
They have said that Adrian Newey is working exclusively on the 2026 car. So this car, it's as good as it's going to get. It's basically done. I think that, $300 million is an obscene amount of money. But, like, for what? For P7? Like, I personally, I would be quite happy to drive around in P7 for $300 million. I might even settle for a little bit less than that. But I think if you're Max Verstappen, you probably, you know, money is not an issue for him. Money will never be an issue for him. I know why they want him. They can probably afford to pay him. They're probably one of the few teams that could afford to pay him really what he would want. But, like, can they pay him in results in the next 3 years?
So, say 2026, this Newey Wonder car appears in the new set of regulations, and they've got this brand new engine partnership, and they produce this mega car. Can Aston Martin still win races, though? Like, the team.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, it is the Jordan team from years and years ago, isn't it? You know, it's the really you're getting into the same thing as Audi. You know, it's still the Sauber team. Are they really going to win championships? They might get the odd race win. You know, but again, we probably felt the same way about Mercedes as well.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it with McLaren last year. I didn't know how many, you know, resources they leave on the table just because they weren't used to winning races. Yeah. And yeah, it's a good point. You've got to think that Aston might be in a similar boat if they did get to that point, that they're going to leave some results on the table because they're not used to being in those positions and making the strategy calls and stuff like that that you need to win the championship.
I mean, even now, McLaren's biggest threat to the championship is McLaren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that the same has to be said for Aston Martin. But, you know, I'd like to be hopeful, given the amount of money and the amount of resources that's being put into that project, that they might get something. But it's Formula One. There's no guarantees about that.
That's Toyota.
Yep.
What actually made me think of was the Williams BMW, and BMW putting this rocket ship of an engine in a Williams, and Robert Kubica kind of having some good results. It's still a Williams at the end of the day. It was still the Williams team and a Williams car, and there's only so much one part of that can do.
Yeah, it's hard to know. Again, we should probably do an Aston Martin episode at some point. I mean, I do find the long-term trajectory of that team really fascinating, because at some point they have to realize that one of those drivers is not going to cut it. And it's up to you to decide which one it is. You might decide that maybe now both of them can't cut it anymore, but that there is very much a nepotism issue there that's going to have to be addressed at some point.
I mean, as a lifelong Aston Martin fan, I am looking forward to when they hit the front of the grid.
Well, let's say one of them drivers has world championship points and the other doesn't.
He finished. Alonso finished P11, but Lance Stroll finished P16. So,
but yeah, it's funny. Like I say, I think we should do. You could do a whole episode on Aston Martin, because when you say the long term trajectory of the team, and it's like, I just don't think the word long term matches with that team, to be honest. But yeah,
well,
for another time.
I think out of all the teams that are for sale, that one is probably the most for sale. But that doesn't mean it's officially for sale. It just means it's unofficially for sale more than any of the other teams. Anyway, that's about it for the 2025 Saudi Arabia Grand Prix. If you enjoyed this episode, please let us know. If you didn't enjoy it, maybe just keep that bit to yourself.
Drop a comment on Spotify.
Oh, yeah, do that. Yeah. Comment, like, comment, subscribe. Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Do all those things. Tell your friends. Tell random people on the street.
Everyone should follow Mr. James Robinson in his comment on the episode 57 of the Vocast on Spotify. Thank you very much.
Thank you, James. Please let us know what you thought of this episode if you enjoyed it. Screw you, FIA. Does that mean I'm going to get fined €10,000?